Welcome to our episode of Revenue Chat. Today we have Richard Hasnoth, a former professor of the School of Management at Arizona State University and multiple author, including the well-known Proven Practical Innovation That Delivers Results. He also has the Innovation Best Practices podcast with listeners in 72 countries. He's fortunate to having achieved his dream of running several successful businesses, but gets his greatest joy from his family. Richard is going to talk about practical innovation that is going to help you sell more and make more next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony Gierso with Revenue Chat, brought to you by the book Easy Sales Procedures. With us, we have Richard Hasnoth, author of 6 books, including the popular Proven Practical Innovation That Delivers Results. He also has the Innovation Best Practices podcast with listeners in 72 countries. Now, Richard has lived his dream, including a wonderful family that gives him the most happiness. His roots come from a sales and marketing executive for Procter & Gamble for 16 years and vice president of Gallo Winery for 10 years. Richard was also a professor of the Arizona State University teaching upper-level marketing, innovation, and leadership courses. He now runs Innovate to Grow Experts, a leading front-end innovation consulting company, and is devoted to helping others with his proven practical innovation that helps you sell more and make more. You can also call him the innovator. Richard's site is i2ge.com. That's the letter I as in ice, the number 2, G as in George, E as in Edward, .com, i2ge.com. All right, get ready for Richard to teach you his proven practical innovation method. The class has started. Everyone, please be seated. Now, first, I'm going to define the word innovate for you, as I think that's going to be helpful in today's show. The dictionary says innovate is make changes in something established, especially by introducing new methods, ideas, or products. And it comes from Latin, basic meaning make new. So there you go. That's the innovation. All right. Let's bring Richard on the show. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Tony, great to be with you. I've listened to your broadcast, and you do some really good work.
Oh, well, thank you. I love hearing that it's doing well and that you like it. It makes me feel very good because my whole intent is to give back to the community and help people, and I really love hearing those, so thank you. And it's also an honor to have someone with your distinction on my show, so thank you very much again. Now, Richard, I mentioned some of your history, and perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little bit more on your roots. And can you tell us all, how did you become an expert in this field, and how did it all start for you?
Well, it really started with my business career at Procter & Gamble. And where, looking back on it, Tony, I see that what I really had the greatest interest in was innovation on the businesses that I worked on. Brought some great innovation in my career at Procter & Gamble in one of the divisions that I ran. We doubled the profits in the first year and went from the number 2 share brand in the market to the number 1 share brand during that period of time. And the thrill of innovation and how powerful innovation can be for growing a business made an impression on me. And then when I went out with out to the Gallo Winery and worked for a fiery Italian who I deeply loved, Ernest Gallo, innovation again was what really drew my greatest attention, and we had the greatest success with. It was almost like continuous innovation. So when I left the corporate world, it was no surprise that I decided to get into the innovation business from a consulting perspective. And Tony, I think the thing that has really driven me, and you've got a sales background and you and I share this, in the innovation business, I really don't have much interest in theory. In fact, that I have no interest in theory. What I really have interest in is proven, practical stuff that any one of your listeners can go out and use in their life or their business. You were kind enough to give a definition from the dictionary of innovation, and here's the definition that I use. And it's not at odds in any way with what you do, but it's very simple, because I'm kind of like a simple guy sometimes. And I define innovation as action to make something better. Now,
I like that.
Can be to solve a problem or to optimize an opportunity, but it's action to make something better. And with that sort of definition, I teach and help people with proven practical innovation, not just in inventing new products, and we've done a tremendous amount of that, but if you're in the supply chain, if you're in manufacturing, if you're in HR, in your life, you can bring innovation best practices to all of those. So it's not just the tradition. When you think of innovation in business, so many people think it's the responsibility of marketing or R&D or research or some combination of those. And what I'm suggesting to your listeners is innovation is much, much bigger than that. It applies to any aspect of the business, and quite frankly, it can apply to any aspect of your life.
That's profound. I love it. Let's get more into this. One of the things you talk about is success vision. Perhaps we could start from there, and then I'll let you have the floor. What is success vision, please?
Yeah, and thanks for asking the question. What I focus on in my business, Innovate to Grow Experts at i2ge.com, what I focus on is what in the industry is called front-end innovation. And it really involves three steps. The first step is before you embark on an innovation project, you need to create a vision of what success looks like. Now, you say, Richard, gosh, that sounds often common sense. I can't tell you how many times, Tony, I've worked with companies that I've asked them a simple question early on after they've hired me. Hey, what does success look like? Well, we make more money. Yeah, well, there's hundreds of ways that we could do that. I mean, we've got all 360 degrees of the compass directions that we could go in to conceivably do that. What you need is a vision of what success looks like. And what I, before you even begin, and what I urge people to do when they're creating a vision for success is raise the bar up pretty high. Because to be successful in innovation is very, very difficult. For more than 30 years, the following facts have been true. 75% of all new products and services fail within 5 years, with most of them failing within the first 18 to 24 months. A 75% failure rate, conversely, only 25%. So, and that applies whether you're Procter & Gamble or Procter & Joe down on the corner store. It really doesn't matter. Those rates apply across the board. So if innovation has that high a failure rate, what can you do to increase your chances for success? And this is really what I focus on in helping people. How do you increase your chances for success? And the first thing you need to do is define a vision of what success looks like. And what I urge people to do is to reach high, to go for really big ideas. In fact, I actually urge people to read Jim Collins' great just book that I absolutely love called Good to Great. It was one of the best sellers in business for all time. And what Jim Collins shows in his book Good to Great about companies that have gone from good to great, one of the things that has driven companies from good to great is what Jim calls, and where he came up with this phrase, Tony, I really don't know, but he calls it his hedgehog concept. Let me translate what that means. It very simply means companies that went from good to great figured out how they were going to be better than any other company in the world at something that customers really wanted. That's where the bar is set, better than any other company, than anyone else in the world is doing in delivering a certain set of benefits to customers. Well, that's setting a very high bar, and I urge people as they think about creating a vision for success, maybe they don't go all the way out to being best in the world, but certainly dramatically better than anything that exists today. So step one, create a vision of what success looks like.
I like it.
Step two is, okay, how are we going to accomplish that? And in business, that's often called a strategy. So what is your strategy to accomplish it? And there's a whole bunch of stuff out there on strategy, and I'm a simple, practical guy, and here's how I approach strategy. Here are the factors that I take a look at when I'm creating a strategy to achieve a vision for success. There's three perspectives I really want to see and understand. First, I want to understand my competition, both business competition and the strengths and weaknesses my competition has, how they're growing, how they're weak, what kinds of budgets, and I want to know everything I possibly can about competitors. And I'm really looking for where are they really strong, where are they weak, where are their trends that I can take advantage of. The second thing is I really, really need to understand the customers for the products that we're trying to sell. I need to know who, what, and why about customers, who they are, what they do, and why do they do what they do. I need to know their differences and similarities in different kinds of products. I need to know what their needs are, especially their hierarchy of needs. What's their number one need? What's their number two? What's their number three? Because quite frankly, Tony, if my innovation program isn't going to make some dramatic improvements in the top one, two, or three benefits that consumers look for in the type of products, I pretty much should stay home, because when I start getting down to need number four, five, six, down to 10, you know, it's something that customers, it doesn't really have the power to change what they're going to purchase. And the third thing that I do is really take a look at the business of the client. What capabilities they have, where do they have world-class capabilities, where are they admittedly weak, what additional capabilities might they need to go to acquire to achieve the vision of success, what are their assets and liabilities. So in creating a strategy, you need to get all this information on the table about competitors, customers, and your business. And when you do that, and with the right group of people, you are able to come up and say, this is the strategy we are going to use to achieve the vision for success. So I want to just pause there for a moment, and I'll go on to the next part here in a second, and see if there's any thoughts or questions that you have about it. So the front-end innovation begins with vision, then you create a strategy to accomplish that vision, and those are the first two things that we do. And after we, if you have any thoughts on this, I'll then go on to the creation of ideas.
Well, thank you. So far, this is excellent. This is a basic sales pattern of how to take a customer and a client to the higher level, find out all about the client, and this is very good groundwork to obtain, so that one knows, can you help that client? What can you do for the client? Where should I focus in on that client? What does that vision look like? What entails that success? What makes it look successful? What is it? Where are you trying to go? So this is very, very good. I like it. I do feel like I'm in class, by the way, but I love it. I really do, but I love it. This is great. You're a very excellent teacher. Please carry on.
Okay. Thank you. So front-end innovation starts with vision, goes to strategy, and once you've accomplished those, you then need to develop ideas. And in the world of innovation, ideas are as critical as gasoline is to a car. And octane is to a car. The more ideas that you have, the longer, the further, and the bigger you're going to be able to do. So we have a process that we use with clients that we call quantum idea generation that generates at least 12 times more ideas than brainstorming. And before I go into it, I want to give credit where credit is due here. A good friend of mine who I worked with at Procter & Gamble founded a place called Eureka Ranch. His name is Doug Hall. And Doug pioneered this very, very powerful idea-generating process. And the claim of 12 times more ideas than brainstorming has been confirmed in two Oklahoma State University studies. So this is not sales puffery. This is proven fact that the methods that I'm going to talk to you about generate at least 12 times. The reason I say at least, because my team at I2GE and I have taken Doug's version 1.0 to version 2.0. And while we've not done the university studies on this, we genuinely believe that we're probably up around 20 times brainstorming, 20 times more ideas than brainstorming. Suffice it to say, it's a lot more ideas than brainstorming. So how do we do this? Well, since ideas are critical to success and innovation, we know that we need to do four things to generate at least 12 times more ideas. The first thing we do is we collect, before running a creative idea generating session, we assemble a very diverse group of people. Diversity is critical to success. Why? Well, if I only bring people from the client into a creative idea generating session, I'm going to get a very limited number and quality of ideas. Why is that? Well, I'm very fond of saying something that I found true for decades, and it's this. It is very difficult to get out-of-the-box thinking from people who live in the box. Okay? And this,
so true.
This is something that has been confirmed by other folks, too. This is not a unique insight on my part, but so many people forget it. So if you can't get those big ideas from just people that work within a client, where do you go get diversity? Well, we go for diversity in two big areas. First, we look around the world when we're working with a client to find experts who have relevant expertise to the project at hand. If it's a food project, we're looking for the top food researchers in a particular area in the world. And we want relevant expertise that does not duplicate the expertise of the client. For example, we did a major food inventing project for a large international company with very robust R&D capabilities. And we went around the world and actually found the experts needed at Cornell, Penn State, and Ohio State, researchers that were doing cutting-edge research in the area that the client needed a solution, and the client was not aware of the work they were doing. So that's one group that we brought into a creative session, and it blew the doors off. The second thing that we do is we bring diversity of highly creative people into a session. And those people, quite frankly, come from my team of experts at Innovate to Grow Experts at i2g.com. And those people, my team has been at this for years. We know how to search for and help people develop really big ideas. So the diversity we talk about is threefold. First, we bring people in from the client, the best expertise we can get from the client. Two, we bring in expertise external to the client that's relevant expertise that doesn't duplicate what they have. And then we bring in people that are very, very creative people and know how to bring all of these resources together to do it. And for any of your listeners, I've just spent a couple of minutes on this, but for any of your listeners that are interested, you were kind enough to mention my Innovation Best Practices podcast. If they want to learn more, they can go listen to episode 2 of that podcast to hear a lot more about diversity. So diversity is the first of the four elements needed to generate 12 times more ideas. The second one is bringing the right kinds of stimulus into the room. What do I mean by stimulus? I mean visuals, I mean data, I mean examples, all kinds of things. Let me just give you a very simple example. At Arizona State, this is how I would demonstrate it to my students. I would ask them to take out a pad of paper, and I would ask them to write down on that pad all the places they would like to go on vacation. When they were done, I asked them to draw a line under the last item. Then I asked them to go to the back of the room where I had laid out hundreds of travel brochures, and I asked them to look through it, and they found more places that they wanted to go on vacation to add it to their list. Every person in the class did this. We added up the before number, the after number, and we always got, Tony, we always got triple the number of ideas after people went and had stimulus of looking at travel brochures. So it was a very simple demonstration of the power of stimulus to generate so many more ideas than if you just sit down and say, okay, where do I want to go? So bringing visual stimulus in of all kinds, and it really varies on the kind of project, can make a tremendous difference in the number and quality of ideas you do. And again, if people want to know more about that, episode 3 of the Innovation Best Practices podcast. The third element, Tony, is a very interesting one, and it challenges some people's preconceived notions. Here's a fact. Everyone is equally creative. And you say, you aren't born creative? No. You aren't a special gifted person? No, not necessarily. But here's a fact that people don't quite understand. Left and right brain people are equally creative, but are creative in very, very different ways. So when we bring a creative group together, we have everybody take an assessment. We know the makeup in the room of left and right brain thinkers in the room. Is this primarily a left brain group, primarily a right brain group? What is it? And then we have specific idea-generating exercises to help left brain people be their absolutely most creative, and the same thing for right brain people. And the exercises, Tony, are very, very different. Let me give you an example.
Please.
Left brain people like step-by-step working in a small group with a pad, writing ideas down, sharing them in a one-on-one or a one-on-three situation. Right brain people like group idea generation. They like random stuff. And let me give you an example. I was running a very left brain group for a company in Colorado years back, and it was a very left brain group. And I just wasn't getting the energy out of the room, Tony, that I needed. So I decided to shake things up by running a right brain exercise for a very left brain group. And this exercise was, I would show them pictures of like a polar bear, a bowl of clam chowder. I mean, just random visuals, and I just asked them to write down the first word that they thought, write it on a post-it, put it on a board that I had, and I just went through these random visuals, writing single words down on post-its and putting it on a board. And then I chose three words off the board, and I put them up on a flip chart, and we went to the next round of idea generation. But before we could get there, the senior client person in the meeting said to me, this is what you love, Tony. He looked at me and he said, Richard, do you have any idea what you're doing? You know, one of those confidence-building comments from the client during the session, right? We all love this, right?
Yep,
and,
yep.
And I got a big smile on my face because this is what left-brain people, they think you're crazy when you're using right-brain exercise groups. They really do. And I said to him, I used his first name, I said, I'm going to ask you to trust me on this. We've got about another 12 minutes to go in this particular exercise, and why don't you judge it based upon where we come out 12 minutes from now? And he kind of put his head down and like, you know, this stands 0% chance of working. Well, fast forward to the end, and everybody was amazed how this, what looked like a random chaotic process, actually came up with ideas that we had that were really promising, that people were jumping up and down about. And we got it using a right brain process. It really energized the group, and I was able to go back to left brain exercises from there. With the purpose in sharing this with your listeners is that this is left and right brain are like to produce ideas in very different ways. They're equally creative, and we design exercises to optimize left and right brain creativity when we're running a session. And again, episode 4 of the Innovation Best Practices will help people with that. The last of the four, and then I'll shut up here for a couple of minutes. The last of the four, Tony, that's very important is it's very important in a group to have fun and to completely eliminate fear from the session. And you say, well, gosh, that sounds reasonable, Richard. But you don't know how difficult that can be sometimes, because we have in sessions, we often have very senior managers and leaders, you know, vice presidents, directors, and that sort of level in a session. And these people are used to quickly judging things. And if they even roll their eyes at someone, sharing an idea, somebody's going to say, whoops, I don't want to hurt my career. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to pull back. And so I really put a lot of effort into working with the senior leaders in a market in a session and helping them understand that there will be plenty of time for judging, but not now. Here's why it's so important. in all my years of doing this, Tony, when I'm running a session, and in a particular exercise, a group of four people at a table has developed this absolutely breakthrough idea that's blown away everyone else in the room. When it's over, I go up to them and I say, how did you guys come up with this? And here's what I hear 9 out of 10 times, Tony. I hear this. Sue blurted out this absolutely wild and wacky idea. And then Joe said, hey, that makes me think of this. And then Janice said, oh, and we could do this. And then Robert jumped in and said, hey, let's pull all this together, and this is what it looks like. Here's why it's important. If people had not been in a place where they were secure enough and knew that this was going to be fun to blurt out wild and wacky ideas, we would never have gotten to there. So I need to, when I'm running a session, I need to create the space, the freedom, the security for people to be able to blurt out those wild and wacky ideas that then turn into the absolute biggest ideas that come out of the session. So, in summary for your listeners, if you want to generate 12 times more ideas, there's four things you need to do. Diversity, episode 2 of Innovation Best Practices. Stimulus, episode 3. Left and right brain, episode 4. Fun, not fear, is episode 5. You do those. Even if you're doing this for the first time, Tony, I guarantee you that in the first time you do it, you may not get 12 times. That'll come the second or third time. But the first time you do this, you're going to get at least 3 to 5 times more ideas than you would ever have gotten out of brainstorming.
Wow. I'm impressed and amazed, Richard. That is awesome stuff. You know, next week I'm doing a sales consultation and enrollment. I've done many for decades. But this is so inspiring. I'm going to re-listen again to this show, transcribe it, and take some of these points to heart, because one thing I believe is always improving, obviously. That's why I do the show. That's why experts come. There's always more to know. There's always more to grow. There's always more, because I think basically if a person stops trying to grow, then what happens? There's a decay. So I love it. I'm very inspired. Maybe it's my Italian nature. I'm easily inspired. It's a little mild joke, but hey, it's a nice. I really like it, and I'm going to utilize this in my presentation next week. I love it. I love it. This is very inspiring. As a matter of fact, Richard, I believe you have so much material. It probably would be great to do another couple more shows, because there's so much that you have to offer. So, but we'll talk about that later. But I just wanted to give you a good acknowledgement. I'm loving it so far. I hope the audience is loving it as well.
Yeah, I would add one thing here, for your listeners. For anybody sitting there thinking that this is, you know, stuff for only the biggest companies, because those are the examples that I've used, it's not. The principles that I'm articulating here can work for a startup. In fact, can work powerfully for a startup, can work for a small company that's been in business 10 or 20 years and wants to grow through innovation, but just doesn't have the ideas to do it. This process will get you the ideas. Now, there's a lot you need to do after you have ideas. Let's make no mistake about that. But if you don't have ideas, you don't have a next step to go to, quite frankly. So that's why you need this. So this is really, when I share this with people, well, I've done a lot of work with large corporations that have paid me 6 to 7 figures for 60-day projects to invent new products for them. What I'm specifically doing with the podcast, and what I'm specifically doing in my conversation with you and your listeners, is putting this in a form that I know can help any business with any innovation need, whether they've been in business 40 years or 4 minutes. And these principles work. You need to adapt them. I got that. Maybe for a later day, I can talk about how some of these adapt to the smallest of businesses, but they all adapt. It's all a matter of scale, but the principles that I've articulated here can work for any business. And that should be some comfort to your listeners.
Thank you. I'm sure it is. Thank you very much for offering this and providing this to everyone. From the small to the big, this is broad and encompasses and affects the whole world of one's marketing, sales, even leadership. This covers the whole fabric and foundation. Very good stuff. All right, let's move on to another question, and let's see what other goodies you have in your noggin. Richard.
Yes.
Richard, could you please tell me, what is dynamic strategy?
Yeah, well, and I talked a little bit about on the front end about having a strategy, and I always attach the word dynamic to it, Tony, because one of the things, since I'm a proven practical guy, for so many folks, strategy is a theoretical thing. It's kind of like something you need to write, and you put it on a piece of paper, and you file it away, and 6 months later you find it, and it's got 6 months worth of dust. Nobody ever uses it. So when I talk about strategy, I'm talking about a dynamic strategy, which is a living, breathing sort of statement. And what do I mean by that? Well, the world is constantly changing, and the strategy needs to change with it. For example, one of the elements that I talked about that goes into creating a strategy is what competitors are doing. Well, I can guarantee you that 2, 3, 6 months from now, your competitors have not stood still. They've changed in some way. They've introduced new products. They've changed their business model. They've changed pricing. Who knows what they've done? So you need to be able to have a strategy that is a living, breathing document that changes as the world around you changes. I also talked about customers and what they like and what they dislike and what they're buying and not buying, what's growing, what's declining, all that sort of stuff. And that changes. In today's world, these kinds of things change very rapidly. And I'm reminded of my time at Procter & Gamble. And for a period of time, I worked on part of the coffee business, which was Folgers. And we were struggling with, how do we take this very big business, coffee, and grow it? Because after we'd grown market share, the category itself was flat. And we tested products that were very different than standard coffee products. We tested them and called them, in some cases, iced coffee. And people kind of stepped back and said, you know, there's no room for innovation in the coffee category. Well, then this guy out in Seattle started this little retail outlet called Starbucks. That's what it is.
I've heard the name.
And changed the world of coffee. What do you mean innovation wasn't possible? So it's kind of like when you're in the box, and I was part of the process at Procter, so I'm not pointing fingers at people. When you're in the box called the coffee category, and you think it has these sort of boundaries of what you can do and can't do, and quite frankly, Procter was about right if you stayed in the box of what coffee looked like from the perspective of Folgers, they were probably right. There wasn't a tremendous amount of innovation opportunities. But once you took one inch outside the box and you had things, you know, look at the innovation that's happened in this category. You had Starbucks, I mean, and what they've done, and Pete's Coffee and all the rest of the people that are out there. You've got Green Mountain Coffee and Keurigs and single cup coffee makers and all this sort of stuff. It's a revolutionized category. So what I urge people, and this is another reason why dynamic strategy, you need to be plugged into the changes, the rapid changes that are going on in the world as you work with a strategy. So when you create a strategy document, don't check a box and put it aside. It's that for strategy to be a practical tool for you, it needs to be current, it needs to be relevant, and it needs to be right. And you need to put those three elements together to be able to do it. So I'm a great believer in strategy when it's done right and it's seen as a living, breathing process. That's why I call it dynamic.
Wow. Awesome. Intense. Vibrant. Exhilarating. Love it. Love it. So true. It takes it from, you know what you did? You took it from a two-dimensional, monochromatic color. And you've made
exactly.
It 3D with kaleidoscope. It's the kaleidoscope strategy. I love it.
I love your language. I love your language.
Thanks. All right, let's pick another one. You've mentioned some of this, but when I ask you again, you add so much more depth to it. Let's talk about high success innovation. Anything else to say on that?
Yeah, here's high success innovation. And this part of it, I really, really want your listeners to kind of, we've been into this for a few minutes and you may be zoning out. Come back, because what I'm about to say is, if you're interested in bringing innovation to your life or your business, what I'm about to say is probably the single most important insight that you need to get in touch with. Okay? If your innovation is going to be successful, you are going to have to convince users of competitive products to switch to your product. Now, it may be a directly competitive product or an indirectly competitive product. So you need to, if you don't get people to switch, you're not going to get any sales. And you say, well, Richard, that's very common sense. But now let's take a step back. What does it take to get a customer of a competitive product to switch to yours? Let me give you a little unscientific thing that I've been doing with groups for years, Tony. I ask, when I'm in front of a group to demonstrate this, I say, who here is either a loyal Colgate user or Crest user? And I, somebody tells me I'm a loyal Colgate toothpaste user. And I say, okay, I'm going to try and get you to switch. Okay? I'm the Crest brand manager, and I've got three options here to get you to switch. What if I gave you a product that had 25% more fresh mint taste than your Colgate product? Would you switch? I don't get anybody ever getting close to switching to that. I say, okay, what if I gave you a product that had 50% more whitening power than your Colgate product? Would you switch? In my years I've been doing this, Tony, I haven't even got close to getting anybody to switch that's a loyal Colgate user. I say, okay, what if my Crest product was able to reduce the number of cavities that you will get by 75%? See how I've gone from 25 to 50 now to 75%? 75%. Would you switch? In all candor, I do get some people going, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I might consider that. But I get an equal number of people saying, no, I like Colgate. What I'm trying to demonstrate here is that to get people to switch from a competitive product that they're comfortable with, they've been using for months or years, it takes a dramatic improvement in benefits to get people to switch. If you lose sight Absolutely. Of that, if you lose sight of that, you're going to be, it's one, it is to me, Tony, it's the number one reason. There's others, but it's the number one reason that 75% of new products fail. You don't give competitive users a big enough, strong enough, compelling enough reason to stop using their product and using yours. One of the things that we know from the world of market research is that habits and practices, very simply, habits and practices is what you do on a regular basis and have been doing for years. To get customers to change what they normally do, it takes a bazooka to get that changed. It really does. And all of us can readily recognize, and I always give people the following example, and there's many examples, but I'm going to give one that your users will recognize right away. When Apple introduced the iPod, and there's people walking around with CD players that could play one CD at a time, or MP3 players that could play one cassette at a time, an iPod comes out and can play tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of songs on this one little, small device called an iPod. What happened when that came out? I heard people saying, wow. So what I tell people is, if you want to be really successful in innovation, if you want to double your chances for success, because I work with people to say, how can you double your chances from 25% success to at least 50%? One of the key things I tell them is, you need to get to wow. If you show your innovation to customers and they go wow, your chances for success just at least doubled. Okay? So, you know, we talked about the vision of success, and I talked about the hedgehog concept, about being better than anyone else in the world. That's another way of saying where you should set the bar. So the dynamic here is, if you want to be successful in innovation, you need to switch competitive users. To switch competitive users to start using your products, you need a difference that is dramatically better than what they currently have. Dramatically better is not 10%. It's not 25% in most cases. It's seldom 25%. You have to really, really get up there and set the bar that high. When you do that, as I said, you can double your chances for success. So that's what I'm talking about there.
I love it. The wow factor, Richard. And while you were saying that, I was thinking of that Colgate scenario that you gave, and I put myself in that place. And one of the reasons, not necessarily the reason, but one reason why that current Colgate user is so steadfast and such a stalwart in continuing to use Colgate, despite all the Crest bells and whistles and more whitening power and lower price and more toothpaste, is that the Colgate machine continues to put out their commercials to acquire market share, but in effect, those commercials also continuously continue and keep their market share that they already have. And the Colgate user, when he's listening to those commercials, going, yeah, I'm a Colgate user, I do that. And it builds that more trust, it builds that more camaraderie, and it just builds a bigger bond. Now, as long as Colgate continues to pour out commercials and advertisements, they're going to continue to solidify their customer base. If they ever sit back on their laurels and cut back a little bit, I think that would open the door up a little bit more. But I think that's why the wow factor is needed, because of all the messages people are getting that are reinforcing their original purchase decision. And nobody really likes to be wrong, Richard. Everyone likes to be right. That's native to us.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's
the wow factor. I love it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And let me just give you another dimension. Especially in consumer products, Tony, and whether it's Colgate or the brand of soap that you use, and any other product, if in your household where you grew up, your mom used Colgate, and then you went out into the world yourself, I've seen the research. So many people that are intensely loyal to a product kind of encapsulize the product as, well, this is the product my mom used, and this is the product we used in our home, and I'm going to use it in my home, and I'm going to use it with my kids. Now, there are people that view it differently. I got that. But there is a significant number of people, and this is back again to habits and practices. If you've been doing it for years and you trust it, and in your life and in your set of needs and conditions, it works for you, then why should I switch unless you've got something that's dramatically better? And in most cases, people go out there with innovations that are better, just not dramatically better.
That is so, so true and so well said. And, you know, speaking of innovation, I wanted to do something to add a little bit of another dimension to the radio show Revenue Chat. And you've inspired me. I want to innovate, and I'm going to do something new and different on the show, and hopefully our audience likes it. What I'd like to do, Richard, is I pulled a few inspirational quotes from famous people about innovation. And I'll just take a little break from our discussion. I'd like to go over a couple of quotes and perhaps stimulate some other ideas and thought processes. And then if we have some time left in the hour, we'll go back. Is that all right?
Sounds great.
Okay, just a few quotes. I just want to try it. This is a test. And you don't know sometimes until you innovate and try something to see if it's going to stick on the wall or not. So let's throw this on the wall. Let's give this a try. I pulled out a couple quotes here. First one is, and these are some I really like, and there's a lot of quotes, but so it was hard to pick the best ones, but here goes. Here's one from Albert Einstein. If at first the idea is not absurd, then there will be no hope for it. It's almost comical.
Oh. Yeah, it's interesting. The person who I am most always excited about quoting is Albert Einstein. And I'm glad you have that quote, because I think he's got some of the most provocative and thought-provoking quotes, and I think that's one of them. And he's a very smart guy, and who am I to disagree with that?
Yes, and thank you. He has so many quotes, I think I could do a whole show just on his quotes.
Oh, I could too, yeah.
Here's another one from Andy Warhol, if I said it right, Warhol, forgive me. His quote, They always say time changes things, but you actually have to change them yourself. I love that. It's tongue in cheek.
I love that. It's kind of like, because the truth of the matter is, yes, time does go on, but you can stand still, and time will pass you by, in the sense that in that same period of time that you do nothing, competitors can do a lot, and you wake up and find out half your business has gone to your competitors, because for you, time went by and you did nothing.
That's right. That's right. All of a sudden, there's Starbucks everywhere, et cetera.
Yeah.
Here's another one now. Some people may not know who he is, George Bernard Shaw. And he was an Irish playwright, critic, and socialist. And his work was pronounced. He influenced theater, culture, and politics the world over. He passed in 1950, but he still greatly influences us to this day. And I just love one of his quotes. He's got a lot, ladies and gentlemen, a lot. But here's one that I love. Here's the quote. The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man.
Amen. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, the reasonable person says, hey, these things are working well enough for me. The unreasonable person challenges preconceptions and says, and here's one of the things I've done in my life for a long time, Tony. I have this statement of, what if I did this? What if we looked here? What if I asked this question? What this really is about curiosity, which is a powerful creative stimulus to be a curious person. In my life, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I am a deeply, deeply ignorant person. Having said, more than 99.9% of what there is to know, I don't know it. But you know what I love about that is I've got – On good days, I've got reasonably good learning skills, but I love learning. And the unreasonable person that you're talking about there is a person who is interested in inventing the future and is not happy with the status quo. And that's a very powerful basis for bringing innovation to the world.
That's your game changer. That's your out of the box, your Starbucks, as we mentioned, Steve Jobs, as we mentioned, your Richard Hasnot, as we've mentioned.
Yes, I'm a statistical outlier, Tony.
There you are. Yeah. You will be too. We're working on it. Work in progress. Okay, here's another one. Here's one from Winston Churchill. I just have two more, folks. Here's one from Winston Churchill. He said, without tradition, art is a flock of sheep without a shepherd. Okay, there's more. Without innovation, it is a corpse.
Tradition is great. Tradition is conservative. Tradition wants to maintain the status quo. And the status quo serves a purpose and a need at a given point in time, but as time marches on and things change, if you don't innovate the change of the future, you will wake up and find that you're out of business. I mean, look at companies, Tony, that were traditional and went out of business. The biggest one in my lifetime is this company called Kodak.
They owned the world back then.
Company. I mean, it was a financially in the top 1% of successful companies for a long time. And look, they stood still. They wanted to stay with the traditional photography of film and prints and the rest of the sort of stuff. And they stayed with it and stayed with it and stayed with it. and look where they are today. They're bankrupt and essentially out of business. The only value the company, I think, has today is the treasure trove of patents that they have that they can sell and license to other people. But the world absolutely blew right by them because they stuck with the traditional methods and woke up to find themselves irrelevant.
Yes, you know, and speaking of Kodak, I seem to recall one of their turning point, if I could say it that way, I think was bowing out of advertising at a Super Bowl, I seem to think was the event, and Fuji Films got the contract and Kodak didn't want it or something, or didn't think they needed to. And since then they went downhill. I seem to remember that. My facts may not be correct, but it was something like that. But again, yeah, as Winston Churchill said, without innovation, it is a corpse. So, yeah. Okay, and then one more here from Steve Jobs. He's my last one. I love this one. He said, innovation distinguishes between a leader and a follower.
Amen.
That's
amen.
Deep.
I mean, the companies that I have the most admiration for are Tesla, Google, and Apple. And not to say there aren't other companies out there, but those are certainly, and there's no magic, and there's nothing unique in what I said. But I had the opportunity earlier in the day to have to talk to Microsoft on some software issue, and I was, and 3 days prior to that, I'd have to deal with Apple support on an issue, and the dramatic difference in the quality of the products and the quality of the service and the quality of the software that Steve Jobs brought is absolutely amazing. And he was a leader in every way that you can imagine in business. Now, to be clear, not everything he did was a success. There's all kinds of things that didn't work for him. Some of them the result of him getting fired and replaced by the Pepsi CEO for a while. So it's people need to realize that being a successful innovator, just as I talked about 75% of products failing, Steve Jobs had a number of failed, but he learned. My relationship with failure, Tony, is I turn failure from a negative to a positive when I squeeze the learning out of failure that allows me to do something better in the next step. And so failure is not something to be feared. When failure becomes a teacher, it becomes a friend.
Wow. Very reflective. I like that. Very deep. Well, excellent, Richard. Thank you. That's very excellent. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to let our audience know about? We've got a couple more minutes. What else can we give them in closing?
Yeah, I'm just going to put a plug in my Innovation Best Practices podcast on iTunes, and you can go to i2ge.com/podcast. And if your listeners want to contact me directly, I love hearing from folks. My email is richard@i2ge, as you said, letter I, the number 2ge.com. Contact me, and I've got lots of resources that are free on the website at i2ge.com. So lots of things that the podcast is free, the apps are free. There's a lot of stuff that I have available to folks to help them if that's going to.
Very cool and very stimulating. I think we've lost the call somehow, maybe a bad connection. I think that Richard has gone off the air. Well, we were just wrapping up anyway, so I wanted to say, Richard, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. It was absolutely great. I loved it. And I hope that you're not angry and that's not why you hung up. That's just a little joke. As a matter of fact, we barely touched the material that you have that I wanted to talk about. So I would love to have you back on again and discuss a lot more on the show. As a matter of fact, I think Richard's just calling in right now. Hi, Richard.
Yep.
Do we have you back? Oh, good. I was talking about that it was a pleasure to have you on the show, how much fun we've had on it, and that we've just barely touched the material that I wanted to cover, and that I hope to have you back on again to cover more, because this is very insightful and full of creation, and I like that. I like to create, and I think this is a very creative show.
Good. Well, it's been fun for me, Tony, and I think it's been fun for you and I. More importantly, I hope it's been fun and informative and helpful to your listeners.
Awesome. Well said. Well, all right. Okay. Well, there you go, everyone. That is Richard Hasnote. The site is i2ge.com. That's I as in ice, the number 2, the letter G as in George, E as in Edward.com. i2ge.com. Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, everyone. And stay tuned to our next show of Revenue Chat. We're going to have Rick Goodfriend. That's his real name. He says most people communicate dysfunctionally using blame, shame, guilt, and fear. He found the secret on how to bring more calm, ease, and trust to your listeners' personal and business relationships instantly. This is the guy that had gang members eating out of his hand after he insulted them by accident. He's the author of the book, I Hear You But... with over 100 communication tips. Rick is going to share tips on how to be a great listener, expresser, and have heart on the next episode of Revenue Chat. This is Tony D'Urso, brought to you by Easy Sales Procedures. Get the book, Easy Sales Procedures, for you and all your business contacts at TonyDURSO.com. All right. Until next time, and remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely. Hi, this is Tony D'Urso, author of the new book, Easy Sales Procedures. You know, in my career, I've made impressive record-breaking sales forays into real estate, collectibles, insurance technology, and other varied industries. My accomplishments include raising $3.25 million in a six-month period. Now, despite what we've been told, sales is an art. There are sales procedures that can be applied precisely as a science, but in essence, it's truly an art. There are fundamentals that you need in place that will help you with your sales, marketing, and business. Get Easy Sales Procedures to help put your business into proper perspective. You know, too many people seem to make sales complicated. Hey, it's easy. All you need are some basics and 3 words: open, agree, and get. That's it. That's EasySalesProcedures.com. This book will endow you with the simple truths at the core of being a sales master, and also contains salesman training drills that, when practiced, demonstrate how to interest any person in anything. These simple procedures can be applied by anyone from any walk of life, because in modern day society, every person is involved in interesting or selling someone something. That's Easy Sales Procedures. Get your copies now at a low price from EasySalesProcedures.com. Order enough for all your employees, too. Here's to volume sales success for your life and business.